Something we experience a lot in our culture is decision fatigue, having so many options and feeling exhausted by it. But picking out what to wear shouldn't be that overwhelming. And that's why I love Quince. Getting dressed is just easier when you have well-made basics you actually want to wear. Quince specializes in high-quality essentials like ultra-soft organic cotton, premium Mongolian cashmere sweaters, and premium stretch denim starting at just $50. They have that elevated feel without the luxury price tag. Lately, I've been reaching for their silk camisoles in different colors because they instantly make an outfit feel more polished. Quince is able to offer prices that are 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They also carry very high quality but affordable home goods as well. Upgrade your everyday. Download the Quince app for app exclusive offers or go to quince.com/POR. Get free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada and the UK too. That's quince.com/POR.
If you're anything like me and you love finding books that completely pull you into another world, I have a recommendation for you. I recently read The Dare by the New York Times bestselling author Harley LaRue, and I totally get why this book has become such a viral sensation. It's the dark romance prequel to the bestselling Losers series and follows a former prom queen and the guy she relentlessly bullied in high school. Years later, they end up at the same Halloween party where one game of drink or dare changes everything. Could not put this book down. The Dare actually made headlines after it was temporarily banned by Amazon for being too sexy before they reinstated. And this new edition is especially fun because it includes a gorgeous gold foil cover and an all-new bonus novella called Ghosted that's never been published before. So if dark romance is your thing, or if you've been looking for the next book talk worthy read, I definitely recommend checking out The Dare by Harley LaRue. You can find it wherever books are sold in print or ebook. I'm Julie Krafcik.
And I'm Yue Xu. This is The Psychology of Relationships. What if the biggest obstacles in our relationships aren't always outside forces, but rather inside our own heads? Even in the most loving, long-term partnerships, our brains can sabotage the connection we want most, and it often happens before we even realize it. In this episode, we're joined by Shehrzad Shamin, author, coach, and founder of Positive Intelligence, to explore the psychology behind why even strong relationships hit repeated roadblocks. Drawing on groundbreaking research, he exposes the 10 well-disguised mental saboteurs. Internal patterns like the judge, controller, victim, avoider, and pleaser that quietly undermine our potential and our closest relationships. These patterns don't just affect how we think, they shape how we feel, react, and relate to our partners, often creating conflict or emotional distance without anyone intending it. Shehrzad explains why the very traits that felt magnetic at first, our partner's intensity, independence, or spontaneity, can later trigger irritation or conflict. And that's because our brains are wired to detect threats, avoid discomfort, and try to maintain control. Mechanisms that once helped us survive, but now sometimes push us away from intimacy. When partners understand the psychology behind their own self-sabotage, they can move from frustration to connection, from conflict to collaboration, and from reactive cycles to lasting intimacy. Shehrzad shows how positive intelligence, or PQ, the ability to recognize and intercept self-sabotaging thoughts, can transform how we respond, communicate, and connect. Strengthening PQ helps couples move from reactive patterns to mindful, intentional interactions, which are essential for a long-term partnership. Remember to subscribe to The Psychology of Relationships on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen, and leave a rating and review if this episode helped you see your relationship in a new way. This is The Psychology of Relationships, and you're listening to an episode that just might change the way you show up for love. Enjoy! We've heard of IQ, we've heard of EQ, and now there's PQ, which is positive intelligence, and this positive intelligence quotient
you know, we got Shirzad here, and you've talked about how we go to the gym to exercise our muscles. So there's also a way for us to exercise our mental strength. Hi, Shirzad.
Hello, Yui. How are you?
Great.
So glad to have you here. I mean, as someone that has not taken your course yet, and I've heard so much about it, what is positive intelligence in your own words?
Yeah, positive intelligence is a measure of your mastery over your own mind. If you're a fan of Star Wars, what we talk about is that inside your mind, there is a war raging between your inner Jedi and inner Darth Vader at all times. Your inner Jedi is the positive one in you who serves you and serves your interests and helps with your relationships and all those good stuff. And your inner Darth Vaders, which we call your saboteurs, are the ones that are constantly sabotaging you. So we believe inside every mind there are voices that are constantly sabotaging you, and there's a voice that's your true self that is serving you. The balance of power between those two things is what we help change. We help strengthen your inner Jedi, weaken your inner Darth Vaders, and as a result, you end up transforming your relationships, transforming how you feel. You'll feel a lot happier and less stressed, and also perform a lot better in whatever you do. And so the measure of how strong you are at that is what we call that your positive intelligence level, PQ.
That is so fascinating and so important for dating. We hear this all the time, that sometimes we get in our own ways and it's hard to decipher what are areas of our mind we should be paying attention to versus the areas that are sabotaging us.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I can look you in the eye and everybody else who's listening to us and say, you are actively every single day sabotaging the effectiveness of your relationships, your own wellness and your own performance. You're in a constant self-sabotage mode. The question is not if you're doing it. The question is how
you're
strongly
doing it.
Are you doing it, and in what way are you doing it? There are 10 ways we self-sabotage. We call those the saboteurs. Every single one of us has a few of those. So I can absolutely guarantee you that you're busy self-sabotaging without knowing it.
And I want to get to these saboteurs, but before we do that, why is it that we're constantly sabotaging our lives and our relationships?
Yeah, this is a part of evolutionary development of our brain. Let's use one example, which is the judge saboteur. The judge is the one saboteur that's universal. The judge saboteur constantly finds what's wrong, not what's right, with me, with you, and with everything else, right? And it's the one that wakes you up at 3 in the morning and says, you idiot, what's wrong with you? Why did you make that stupid mistake again? When are you ever going to learn? Or the one who says, you know, you're going to screw up tomorrow. Who do you think you are? It's also the one in a relationship that's constantly finding what is wrong rather than what is right with the other person. And that's devastating to a relationship when the other party, every time you open their mouth, criticize what else you have found wrong with them rather than appreciation of what's right with them. So the question is, why do we all have the judge saboteur? And the answer is millions of years of evolution. The predisposition to look at the negative and amplify the negative and be obsessed with the negative was actually helpful for the survival of our ancestors. For our distant ancestors, if the tree started shaking and you weren't quite sure what animal is going to emerge from behind the tree, if you were in a judge mode and always assumed the worst and said, I bet you there's going to be a tiger coming out to eat me, that negative predisposition was helpful for your survival. If you were very positive and you said, you know, I have a good feeling today, I think it's a sunny day, I'm very optimistic, I think it's a koala bear coming to give me a hug. How long do you think
you'd
survive?
Right.
Exactly, you'd be dead. So predisposition to the negative was very helpful for our survival. Now, the other 9 saboteurs also are helpful for the survival of us as kids. As kids, we are very vulnerable physically and emotionally. So saboteurs are your initial protectors in this crazy, scary thing called life. And we need them as kids, but by the time we are adults, they become habits of our mind. So without knowing it, we keep going back to the old thing we used to do to feel safer physically and emotionally.
That negativity can really be detrimental for a lot of our relationships because we could sabotage really great relationships by doing that. But you personally experience a very tumultuous upbringing involving both physical and emotional abuse. And in your in your program, you talk about how that really affected your adult life. So can you give us a little bit background about your upbringing and then how this has inspired you to come up with positive intelligence?
Yeah, I was a very sensitive kid growing up in really harsh circumstances. Four siblings, with my parents living in poverty in a tiny apartment. But the worst thing was my father was a pretty terrifying guy. I was really scared of him. I wasn't getting much love or attention from either of my parents. And basically, early on, the survival mechanism of the judge came in. I needed to explain why is it that I'm not getting much love or attention from my parents. And I could not admit the reality to myself, which is, hey, I just have very imperfect parents. Because when you think about it, it is absolutely terrifying for a child to realize that his parents are imperfect. Why? Because my life depended, was in the hands of my parents. So we cannot come up with a scenario that says, yeah, the truth is your parents are pretty broken people. So I needed to tell a story that had me keep my parents perfect, because that would have actually helped me survive. And so the story was, Shirzad, your parents are actually perfect. And the reason they're not giving you much love or attention is because, Shirzad, you are unworthy of any love or attention. Mm. And that was the beginning of my self-judge. It appears like a brutal thing to do to yourself, but actually it allowed me to say, okay, my parents are perfect beings. I have a reason why they don't love. And Shirzad, you're going to survive because your parents are really pretty powerful, perfect beings, right? Now, once I started doing that, I also needed to start finding what was wrong with other people, because it would have been terrifying for me to think that I am the only unworthy person and broken. So I also started finding what's wrong with every single person, except for my parents. Every person who came in front of me, I would instantly find what's wrong with them. You're too ugly, you're too tall, you're too short, you're too fat, you're too skinny, you're too this. I needed to find what's wrong with you, because I needed also to judge you and drag you down. So again, that for my survival, I said, I'm going to survive because I'm not the only one who screwed up. Everybody else is too. So that was the formation of a very powerful judge of self and judge of others. I had completely no idea I was doing it until 25 years later in Stanford Business School. I was an MBA student. We were sitting in a circle, and the work of this particular class was we had to tell the truth to each other about how we were feeling. And at some point, every single classmate turned to me and said, Shirzad, we got to tell you something. You're incredibly judgmental. It drives us nuts. We can't stand it anymore.
It's wild.
And when the fifth person said the same thing, all of a sudden, I woke up to, oh my God, they are right. I judge everything instantly. It's such an automatic mechanism on my mind. It was a terrifying and life-changing moment in my life, because all of a sudden I saw this judge character in my head filtering things. And I realized I'm not seeing reality. I'm not responding to reality. I'm just reacting through the filter of this judge. And this judge saboteur just got revealed to me when I was 27 years old at Stanford Business School. It changed my life.
I'm like nodding my head, because like a lot of us can relate to that, is that it does tie back to childhood. We've heard that so many times, and we don't know how to put those words into our mouths of what's actually the psychology behind this. So I'm dying to know, I guess, is it innate that it's from your childhood that you have these saboteurs, or are there other ways that you can identify with different ones?
You know, just like every child grows temporary teeth and then they got permanent teeth, there are evolutionary stages of mental development, mental emotional development. So every child develops saboteurs, regardless of what your parents are like and all of that stuff. This is not the you got screwed as a child kind of a thing. And an example is, I have two beautiful kids that I adore. And from day one, they were night and day different from each other. My son was a very introverted, gentle, life is a bowl of cherries kind of a guy. And that beautiful tendency that he had taken too far became his key saboteur, which is the avoider saboteur. So one way to think about what our saboteurs are is, it's your natural greatest strength being taken too far and becoming your greatest weakness. Mm-hmm. So my son having this ease about him where everything wanted to be pleasant and life is a bowl of cherries and all those wonderful qualities that he had, which is his greatest strength, taken too far, it becomes an avoidance avatar who doesn't want to deal with a challenge or a conflict and just wants to take a left turn and not confront it. Now, my daughter was born from day one as an raging extrovert, very powerful being, hard-charging, goal-oriented, all those wonderful things, which is awesome strengths for her to have. Taken too far, it becomes the controller saboteur. Bless her heart. She was predisposed to develop more of the controller. So the question is not whether you develop saboteurs. The question is how strong they are. And are you aware of them so that you can intercept them when you're an adult? My daughter now has an absolute complete awareness of her controller saboteur and knows when to use her power to be an awesome leader and when to, you know, take it easy, go to empathy, go to curiosity, other powers so that she is an inclusive leader rather than a controlling leader. Mm-hmm. And my son knows when to use his ease and flow and positive nature in the hand of, his sage, the counterpart to his avatar that serves him, and when it's being taken too far and becomes the avoider. So they both have deep understanding of these.
This is the most exciting part. When I got to this portion of your program, I kept thinking, well, if we can label the saboteurs, then we know when they're showing up in our relationships. And that's step number one, is labeling them. So I think we should get into who these saboteurs are, how they're showing up in our relationships, so that we can recognize it and label it. And you've already touched upon the judge, which is like the overarching saboteur. How does a judge show up in relationships?
Let me maybe tell a story of how relationships happen. And the judge comes in there to answer your question. So first of all, in relationships, often what happens is people get drawn to the others who have a complementary saboteur, not the same saboteur. As an example, typically a strong controller doesn't get together with another strong controller. Why? Because somebody's going to kill somebody.
Two people can't control the situation.
I know. So a hard-charging controller tends to get drawn to somebody with softer, less aggressive type of saboteurs, for example, avoider or pleaser. Mm. So I already have had fun conversations with my daughter that she has the strong, hard-charging saboteur that she occasionally has, will likely be drawn to a guy who is more gentle type. Saboteurs are fueled by stress. So anytime you feel stressed, our go-to way of dealing with things is through our saboteurs. So let's say Mary meets Mark. When Mary meets Mark in the early days, what's happening, we see the sage in the other person, the original essence beauty of the other person. While we call your saboteur your false self, your negative self, the sage is your true self, your inner Jedi. Initially, in a dating scenario, we see what's beautiful in the other. And by seeing their sage, what's beautiful about them, we actually draw that out more from them. So they show up and more as their beautiful essence, amazing being that they are. And that's contagious. So the sage in one person is contagious. It brings out the sage in the other person. So Mary seeing the sage in Mark is bringing out more of Mark's sage. Essence beauty, that's now bringing out more of that in Mary, and it's a beautiful positive reinforcement through contagion effect. And what's there not to love? The sage in every human being is incredibly beautiful. So love is occurring and all the good stuff is happening. And then they get together and 6 months later, 9 months later, they're living together and Mark is walking by the bathroom and all of a sudden realizes that Mary is, as she was brushing her teeth, she's actually squeezing the toothpaste from the middle, not from the end, but from the middle. Oh my God, this is so crazy. What are you doing?
This is literally what's happening in my relationship right now.
Were you at my apartment last night?
Yeah. No, trust me, it's happening all over the world right now. So his judge comes out and judges what Mary's doing. And points out, you know, hey, and with the judge attitude, like, Mary, what the hell are you doing? You know, you're not supposed to do this in the middle and all that stuff. Now, let's say Mark has the controller saboteur and he is now with Mary who has an avoider saboteur. So now saboteurs are contagious. When Mark came out with his judge and controller trying to control what Mary is doing, What's that going to trigger in Mary is her saboteur, which is avoider, which means she doesn't want to deal with this. She's going to, instead of actually discussing this and coming to a resolution, she just tries to whitewash it and not deal with it and continue with what she's doing. And that avoider's tendency that shows up really now drives Mark crazy. Like, what is this? Who did I get stuck with over here? Why are you so evasive? So the judge and controller gets even stronger. And now that's totally going to bring out Mary's judge now. And she's saying, I didn't know I got such a rigid, controlling, judgy person. Before you know it, their beautiful sage bringing out the sage, me bringing out the best in you, has shifted to saboteurs bringing out the saboteur.
Mm-hmm.
Because through mirror neurons, what we know is that one person being in saboteur mode triggers the saboteurs in the other through a contagion effect. And so we have gone from bringing out the best in each other to bringing out the worst in each other,
mm-hmm.
which is why in our most intimate relationships, we are the cruelest. We are the ugliest in terms of allowing our saboteurs to come out and play free. So we do the most damage actually to the people we love the most because the saboteurs are getting into a contentious stance with each other.
Well, can you just say that again? We do the most damage to the people we love the most?
Yeah, we are the cruelest, right? I mean, we behave better at work. If my boss came to me with a saboteur, I would do my piqueurs. I would behave because there are consequences. And sometimes when we don't quite have the same consequences, we let our saboteurs run free. And the other thing that happens is think about the tango of the saboteurs. In this particular example, Mark's judge and controller reliably bring out Mary's avoider judge, which then reinforces Mark's judge and controller. This becomes a tango that reinforces itself. And every time it happens, it becomes more of a habit. So that in a few months or in a few years, Mark says three words, and before finishing the sentence, Mary has started her whole paragraph because it's just based on muscle memory. We are no longer even listening to what the other is saying. We're going right into the dance of the saboteurs.
Wow.
And the saboteurs get charged up by this. So every time Mark's judge does this and gets the behavior from Mary as an avoider behavior, Mark's judge becomes more reinforced, like something is wrong with Mary. The controller becomes more certain, like Mary really needs some controlling here because without the control, she's actually going to avoid everything and nothing good is going to happen. So the saboteurs prove themselves right every time they come in and create a behavior from the other person. That behavior they get from the other person reinforces what they have made up about the other person. So they keep generating the behavior they actually believe is wrong with the other person. And then they say, I was right to begin with, right? So it's a very self-reinforcing thing. Once we get into these dance of the saboteurs, it's very challenging to step out of it and realize what you're doing.
Well, I'm so glad that we are learning about this today,
yes,
because this feels like the death of relationships to me. And
yes,
I see this really spiraling out of control if you don't get ahead of it.
Let's hold that thought because we have a quick message from our sponsors.
So this might be controversial, but I'm not a big meal prepper. I really just like getting something fresh on the table. And when both my partner and I are working all day, sometimes we don't have time to go shopping and make an elaborate dish during weekdays, which is why I am so excited to try restaurant quality protein from Omaha Steaks. They have so many meats to choose from too, with different types of filet mignon, including butcher's cut, wagyu, grass-fed, burgers, chicken, and so much more. And the reason they are so good is that Omaha Steaks is known for their meticulous aging process. And to make it easy for delivery nationwide, they are flash frozen at their peak to give you that rich, juicy, and intense flavor that they are known for. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com. Promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. If your ideal romance has morally gray characters, impossible love stories, and enough emotional damage to keep you thinking about it for days, you need to read The Throne of Broken Gods by Amber V. Nicole. This is the second book in the Gods and Monsters series, and I feel like it takes everything that I loved about the first one and turns it up another level. At the center of the story are Diana, an ancient shapeshifter who's fully embracing her monstrous side after
devastating betrayal, and Sam Keel, the immortal God King who still believes there's something worth saving in her. This book had me on the edge of my seat the entire read. What I love most is that the story never really lets you decide who's the hero and who's the villain, and the lines get blurrier with every chapter. I could not put it down as I just love the banter throughout the book. And if you're a collector, the deluxe special edition is honestly stunning. With stenciled edges, full color character art and papers, a designed hardcover case, and an exclusive bonus scene. Pick up The Throne of Broken Gods by Amber V. Nicole wherever books are sold. You may or may not have known this, but we actually got our start with our podcast, Dateable. For the last decade, we've been studying modern dating, having thousands of conversations, hearing the patterns, and seeing what actually works or what doesn't. What started as honest conversations turned into something so much bigger. A book, How to Be Dateable, which was published last year with Simon & Schuster, is everything we wish we knew when we were out there dating. The mindset shifts, the patterns, the real talk no one else is saying. So if you're dating or you have a friend, sister, coworker, whoever who is, go grab a copy at howtobedatable.com or wherever books are sold. You can get audiobook, hardcover, or Kindle edition. Because being dateable isn't about changing who you are. It's about finally understanding how you show up. Can you walk us through these nine saboteurs and how they show up a bit in love?
Yeah, let's actually get into a couple of things. One, so that's the mystery of what are the saboteurs. People have a better sense of what they are. So let me give you all the names for them.
Yeah, let's get all the names.
So, So the judge is a saboteur, which is the only saboteur everybody has. Then there are nine other saboteurs, and we have an assessment that helps you figure out which of those saboteurs you have. Usually people have a few of those. Their names alphabetically are the avoider, the controller, hyperachiever, hyperrational, hypervigilant, pleaser, restless, stickler, and victim.
Yes.
What a cast of characters, right? And hope. I'm pretty sure you just recognize yourself and your significant other.
Yes, just by the names alone.
Yeah. So we both took the quiz. Yeah. Yue, which ones did you get that you were the highest in?
Oh, restless.
Restless. Interesting. I could see that with you for sure. Just from the name of it.
And you got, which one did you get again?
Hyperachiever was my number one, and then controller was behind that.
Yeah, hyperachiever was my number two.
So can we go into then like how they show up while dating?
Yeah, so I can go alphabetically. The first is avoider. Avoider, there's an element of avoider that's avoiding unpleasant tasks and deadlines and things like that. So the avoider could be a lot into procrastination, last minute stuff, which totally drives the controller types and some of the other types up the wall. So there's avoidance of tasks and stuff and procrastination, but also just as importantly, avoidance of conflict. So instead of dealing with conflict, telling the other people what you're really feeling, confronting things while they are new and fresh, you let it fester until it blows up in your face. So that's the avoider impact on the relationship, not really being upfront with things that are not working for you and dealing with them real time.
Avoider, I think that saboteur for me personally shows up very early in relationships because I'm trying to be on my best behavior and try to avoid the red flags that I'm seeing.
And one metaphor that this kind of connects with me with is think about a relationship. Let's say initially it's like a perfect rose garden. And in this perfect rose garden, no matter how perfect it is, weeds will start to grow. And what weeds are early on, it's like something the other person said or did that rubbed you the wrong way, but it's kind of not huge yet. It's kind of small initially. Now, if you don't deal with it, if you don't discuss it, if you don't bring light to it and communicate around it, you're not going to pull the weed. What happens is that little weed will actually grow because you start making assumptions about it. It will grow into something bigger and bigger and bigger. And if you keep avoiding dealing with the weeds, then before you know it, there are more weeds in the garden than roses. Controller basically tries to dominate the way the other person does things. It is certain about what the right way is versus the wrong way. And typically the other person chafes against that and says, I feel controlled. Mm-hmm. And it has quite an impact where people push back against it.
A lot of times we see relationships or budding relationships fall apart because someone's not playing by your rule book. So I could see this one being real dangerous in getting in people's way.
By the way, notice that since we talked about controller and avoider as complementary saboteurs, notice what's really happening. I use the example of actually my son having a strong tendency towards the avoider, my daughter towards the controller. What I suggested is that they were born with those predispositions, my son being easygoing, very creative, adaptable, in the flow, my daughter being hard-charging, goal-oriented, driven. Notice these two strengths actually are complementary. And part of the reason unconsciously we are drawn to the other person is not their saboteur, but their strength that the saboteur is overusing. So that's why I was saying to my daughter, you're hard charging and goal oriented and directive and all that stuff. Chances are you're going to find it very, very attractive when a man has a complementary strength to yours that can be easygoing, be in the flow, be in the moment, be in touch with the joy of life and all of that stuff. That's awesome complementation. You're probably going to be drawn to each other because of that complementariness. That's why you would feel the love. Then the problem is that while you're attracted to that opposite style, at some point you start judging that opposite style and say, I'm kind of drawn to this, but God darn it, why aren't you also more like me? Why aren't you more hard-charging? And why aren't you more like this? So we want to have our cake and eat it too. We are drawn to the complementary nature, but at some point we want them to be just like us and have all of those strengths too. And so a real big thing is for us to realize you can't have your cake and eat it too. There is this person's brain is wired differently. They can't bring all those strengths and at the same time bring all of your strengths.
Right.
That's two different human beings. So let's appreciate the difference and not judge the difference. And that's what typically we go to in the relationship.
Okay. So what's after controller? What's the
hyperachiever?
So hyperachiever, which Julie, you mentioned you have too. So the challenge with the hyperachiever, which a lot of us have, whether or not it's our top saboteur, is a conditional self-love and self-acceptance, which says, I am really not worthy until and unless I achieve and achieve and achieve some more. And the problem is that the essence of it is we are attaching our self-worth with achievement rather than saying, unconditional love says, I am this beautiful being, regardless of whether I achieve or not. And one of the things that I wanted my kids to grow up with is know that they were born as a beautiful essence, as unique as their fingerprint. And that beautiful being is worthy of all the love in the world.
Mm.
And so one of the ways that I wanted to make sure that my son and daughter didn't develop the hyperachiever is my son is into tickling game. He loved tickling. So I would start tickling him and I taught him to say all the right answers. I would start tickling him and say, Kian, tell me, why do I love you so much? And he would say, I don't know, Daddy, why do you love me so much? And I would say, well, is it because you're so smart and get good grades? And he had learned to say, and he would say, no, Daddy, it's not because I'm smart and get good grades. And I'd tickle him some more. Is it because you're so great in sports and soccer and all that? And he'd say, no, Daddy, it's not because of that. Tickle him some more. Is it because you're so handsome? And my son is really handsome, goes after my wife a lot more than me. And he would say, no, Daddy, it's not because of that. Is it because you're kind and generous? No, Daddy, it's not because of it. So at some point, I would pretend great frustration. And I would say, so why is it, Kian? Why do I love you so much? And he had learned to say, and he would say, Daddy, it's because I am me. When you think about it, fundamentally, what I was teaching my son is when I ask him, so when he would say, Daddy, it's because I'm me, then I would ask him, what does it mean? He would say, well, I am the person you held in the hospital when I was born. That being is beautiful and worthy of all the love in the world. He does not have to do anything, and it does not have to perform to be loved, worthy of love. That is a profound realization for any human being to have rather than I'm only worthy if I perform.
Yeah.
And same thing in a relationship. If in a relationship you are there so that you are loved by the other person, so that you feel more worthy, so that you fill this void inside of yourself that says I am not worthy until I achieve not only in my performance outside in the job, but also in the relationship I achieve worthiness through being loved, and all of it is trying to fill a void that can only be filled by you saying, I am worthy just because.
That's huge. We hear it all the time. It's like, I'm not going to enter a relationship until I lose that 5 pounds, or until I get a promotion, or until I have X amount in my bank account. So I think it is the external, but also the societal pressure of not having what we think we should have.
Well, and the frustration the other person will feel in the relationship is you're asking them to fill a void that's impossible for them to fill.
Yeah.
No matter how much love they give you, you still feel unloved.
Yes. Yes. And then I see that manifesting as our relationship is not going the way that it should be going. We are not hitting these milestones that we should be hitting as a couple. And then you start creating that resentment towards your partner because they're not helping you achieve these external milestones.
Yeah. It's the way I kind of talk about it is like the Teflon surface. Nothing will no amount of love from the outside will stick to you, because the surface will become sticky only if you feel self-love. Then other people's love will stick. You believe it, you retain it, you appreciate it. But if you don't have deep self-love, other people's love comes and it just doesn't stick. Because if you're not feeling worthy of love, there's something suspicious about other people's love. There's something wrong with them loving you. What's wrong with this person loving this unworthy person that I am? They must be dumb or stupid or something. What's wrong with them? Or I don't quite believe the love. It probably isn't for real. It's probably not going to last or something. But the impact on the other person is they are in a no-win situation. At some point, they're exhausted by just no matter how much I love, I give, it's not enough.
Oh my God, this is hitting home.
And here's the way the saboteurs prove themselves right, remember? By keep saying, I'm not worthy and I'm not worthy, I'm not worthy. Well, the other person is actually at some point when their love is not being received, they get frustrated and they leave. And then you say, see, I told you I'm not worthy of love. I told you I was right to begin with. So the saboteurs generate their own reality, which reinforces their lie. They get more powerful because they keep providing their own evidence for the story they tell. They become a self-fulfilling reality.
Wow. I feel like so much of the last week for me has been explained right now.
Julie's like, all right, I got enough out of this.
Realizations on the moment. Okay, so what's our next one in line?
Hyper-rational.
Hyper-rational is, the rational function being taken too far. So I'm very analytical, I'm very logical, and everything in life, the best way to resolve it and solve problems is through the rational mind, including if I'm having a conflict in my relationship. Well, let me figure this out and fix it for you. This is what's happening. This is what's happening. Therefore, the answer is this. So the hyper-rational brings the rational mode to problem solving in a relationship, which has the other person feel unheard, uncared for. The emotions are not listened to. The emotions are not responded to. So you come across as intellectually arrogant, unloving, distant, all of that stuff, trying to fix the other person's problems in this relationship is quite devastating to a relationship. And what I tell the hyper-rationals is the other person will not feel heard unless their emotions are actually registered and responded to, rather than you trying to fix the problem for them. And so they really step back and realize emotions are not just a noise factor. Emotions are incredibly critical to pay attention to respond to. One of the misunderstandings about the hyper-rational is because of this behavior, we think they are insensitive people, but actually they can be incredibly sensitive. Mm-hmm. They just have learned not to pay attention to emotions because they think that just makes them not objective. So they could be quite sensitive, but we end up judging them as insensitive because we don't see them in that caring way.
Okay, next one. This is fascinating.
So the hyper-vigilant is the one that's finding dangers and risks everywhere. So it's the kind that walks into a room and you just feel their anxiety about life is a dangerous place. I got to be vigilant. I got to be on top of everything. Things can go wrong. And it's an exhausting energy because there's such a anxiety and risk awareness that when we are around them, it's pretty exhausting because they see risks and dangers everywhere. And that becomes contagious where we can't really be resting in front of them. The impact is it just takes the fun away. It's an exhausting way to live when you think and you cry wolves way too often because you see dangers everywhere. And when there's an actual wolf, the other person is no longer believing you because you cry wolves all the time.
Are these the people that, you know, freak out when they start dating someone because they fear that it's going to end or it's not going to work out the way they want?
Yeah, a presumption of everything that could go wrong will go wrong. And it's, again, a self-fulfilling prophecy of, God, there could be so many risks. And you become self-fulfilling there too. If you're predicting all the things that can go wrong, sooner or later, enough of them will, because people get exhausted around you.
Right. Or like, you don't even take a chance when it comes to love. Yeah. You're just too in your head.
You don't trust it. It's just too risky.
Just a reminder for our listeners right now, we're halfway through the saboteurs. I think it's important to note that not just one saboteur defines who you are. We could have multiple saboteurs appear, and some are just more loud than the others. So don't think like, oh, I am the hyper-vigilant person. Like, you could be a combination of few, and it's good to recognize all of them.
Yeah, most people have the judge plus a couple of other saboteurs.
I think I had every single one except for the avoider.
Well, let's get to the pleaser. Let's see if Julie has that too.
Well, let's see. So after hypervigilant, we have indeed the pleaser. So the pleaser is kind of better known, where I am trying to give to you and be kind and say yes to you and all of that stuff. But there's a condition that I'm really wanting to make sure you like me.
Yeah.
And so there's a string attached. It's difference between me being loving and kind just because there's joy in that versus loving and kind because I really want you to like me. There's a neediness to the pleaser. And the problem is that I give and give and give and give and give, and I don't even ask for anything for myself because I'm not quite in touch with my own needs and don't express it. At some point, the other person hasn't given me back enough in response because, first of all, they don't know what my needs are. Secondly, I've been busy giving and not really standing for my own needs. And then I start getting frustrated and saying, what the hell? This is one-dimensional, one-directional. You're too selfish. You're not giving me enough, all that stuff. So we end up getting quite frustrated and resentful in our relationships. Why am I the one who's always giving? Well, part of the reason is because you're not making your own needs known enough. And we sugarcoat our needs when there is an issue that we have. We don't quite directly tell people that we have a need here that's not been met, because in our pleasing tendency, it's hard for us to actually stand firm in what it is that our boundaries are or our needs are. And it's not the other person's fault that they don't know and they don't give back. It's a lot of it is our own creation. So it generates, weirdly, it actually destroys relationships, because at some point we keep getting, the relationship becomes one-dimensional in give and take. And also at some point we are resentful and we push people away out of frustration. Mm-hmm.
This is the classic nice guy, cool girl syndrome, exactly what's happening. And there's a reason why those archetypes struggle with relationships, for exactly what you just said.
And the love bomber too. The person that's just like, I'm going to give you all the love and do all the courting in the beginning, but then feel a very resentful to the fact that they're not receiving anything back.
Yeah. And so we have people take responsibility for that, right? And ask, create boundaries for, when am I saying yes because I lovingly choose to say yes? When am I saying yes because I can't say no, because that's uncomfortable for me?
I bet if I did this a couple years ago, I would have scored a lot higher on this one than I did, because I definitely never told people what was going on. I expected them to be mind readers, and I held it in because I didn't want to rock the boat. And I think you just build a lot of resentment that way. And then one day you snap and it's not good.
Yeah. And then you don't want to give at all.
Exactly. No more giving. Exactly. And you don't give people that opportunity to meet you.
Yeah.
Okay. What's next?
So let's go to, aren't these fun? So the next one
is restless.
Oh, and UA's number one.
Yeah. Okay. Yay, UA. So some of these saboteurs are ones that we all have to some extent, but maybe a little bit more extreme. The people score high on it. So there's a restlessness in all of us to some extent. The Buddhists call the mind the monkey brain, because they say that the mind can't just stay in one branch, jumps from one branch to another, to another, to another. The mind is restless. So all of us have a restless mind. And with those with the restless saboteur, it's even a little bit more so. And the issue with the restless is not quite being present with what's in front of them and always thinking there's something better somewhere else. There's, maybe that next thing and the next thing. So instead of really being present for what is there, They're always wanting to be somewhere else where they could be more a joyful experience of life. The excuse is that life is short and I want to experience it fully. And the paradox is by never quite being there for what's in front of you, you're not experiencing life at all.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of experiencing it most fully, you're never quite present for life happening right this minute.
Mm-hmm.
So the experience is that you jump to too many things. You don't finish things that you start. There's always the shiny next thing that attracts you in relationships. You might be drawn to the initial phase of a relationship, that's shiny and beautiful and new and all of that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And not see it through to the place where it is less shiny and more steady. And one of the metaphors I use is, you know, it's like wanting to get to water and you dig a well by like 10 feet and then you get bored with that. No, let me dig another well, maybe another well, another well. Dig 1,000 wells and never get to water because you don't stay with anyone long enough to hit water, right? So when it comes to relationship, it may be not investing in a relationship long enough to actually get
this is every dater right
this
now.
This is the biggest problem with dating. Yeah, exactly. It's like everyone wants the next item. And if they, you know, especially with dating apps, it makes it easy to believe there's so many options out there.
Yeah.
And if someone doesn't meet every last part of your checklist, you just move on. The maximizer, that's exactly what this is.
Yeah. And it minimizes, right? Because you never get to water.
Right.
So you're never present for what is.
And everyone's going to have a flaw. Every single person you meet is going to have a flaw. So, you know, like you got to just double down on someone. There's no one out there that's perfect.
And everybody's sage, their inner Jedi is much more beautiful and gorgeous than even they realize. So the magic of a relationship, can you bring out the best in the other so much so that they even get surprised by what they discover, how beautiful they discover themselves to be? Most human beings have no clue how beautiful they are in their sage.
Mm.
And that's part of my work, you know, have people discover how amazing they are by letting them figure out how to activate deeper and deeper sage in themselves and quiet the saboteurs.
Well, I think that's what's really interesting about restless is that it's kind of passive. You're letting all these things happen to you and you're searching for stimulation, but you're not actually living that moment.
Yeah.
So it's a very passive way of not being in your own body. I feel like why I identify with this one is when I was dating, I just didn't identify with where I was, who I was. I was just more about the act of going on these dates. I would squeeze them in, you know, pack it all in a day. But who was I in that moment? What did people bring out in me? I didn't even sit in my sage because I didn't even care about that. It was just more about like finding that next stimulation.
And it's like maximizing, you feel like you need to squeeze all these dates in so you can find the best person. And it's just, it's like a perpetual cycle.
But you don't sit to think about how does this person make me feel?
You spread yourself thin. And you don't get to discover your own amazing beauty and power.
Or other people's either, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I think we all feel that one. Yeah, let's do the stickler.
I'm excited for stickler. That's my partner.
So the stickler, the strength that's taken too far is the ability to focus on detail and to bring organization to chaos. And so that's a wonderful strength when you're able to bring order and organization to chaos, be detail-oriented, all that stuff. But taken too far, it becomes a stickler, and the stickler wants everything to be perfect and everything has to be really great. And the problem is that instead of seeing what is good enough as good enough and appreciating anything that's good, you're always pointing to the 1%, 2%, 3% where it's not good enough.
Mm.
And it's incredibly discouraging in a relationship because no matter what the other person does, what they hear from you is the part that wasn't perfect enough.
Mm.
That is incredibly discouraging because after a while you say, if I work really, really, really hard and I'm 97% perfect in this thing, she's going to refer or he's going to refer to 3% that wasn't. So why bother? Let's just do a 50% job because then she's going to focus on a 50% that wasn't. The result is going to be the same, dissatisfaction and critique. And so it generates a lot of anxiety and discouragement in the partner and in ourselves because life is not perfect. Everything will keep falling from order to chaos. And so it creates a lot of anxiety constantly where we are constantly trying to fight life for what it is, which life wants to be in flow and a little bit messier than the stickler wants to allow it to be. So there's a rigidity and anxiety that it brings to both ourselves and our partners.
So my partner has not taken this, but I'm going to go on a gamble that this is him also.
All right.
Great.
So one of the things that comes up is unrelenting standards with this. Do you see that as a flip side of perfectionism, or is that different in this case?
Yeah, well, what I teach the people with stickler saboteurs to do is say, you know, create two buckets, 20%, 80%. And a lot of what you're currently trying to make perfect, actually, when you think about it, good enough is good enough for those things. That's 80% of the stuff you fret over. You got to really relax, take a breath and say, good enough is good enough for these things. That's 80% of what you worry about and criticize others for. Now there is a 20% stuff where perfection is a good thing to strive for, that things really do matter. And then for those 20%, lovingly put your attention on, you know what, let's really try to make this better, right? But that's 20%, not 100%. Mm-hmm. And it allows you to breathe, allows other people around you to breathe, and then focus on things where really high standard is very important. And then you approach that positivity rather than constant frustration, because the telltale sign you're in saboteur mode is negative energy and emotion. If you're frustrated and upset and all that stuff, you're in saboteur mode. Doesn't matter what's happening. If you're in sage mode of trying to make something perfect, there's joy, there's fun, there's creativity. All that good stuff is happening while you're trying to create great stuff.
I want to dive into this even more, but before we do, let's take a quick break to hear from our partners.
Staying present in a relationship might be really difficult sometimes, because it's not just one date. It's every night on the couch, every meal, every, wait, what did you just say? Moment. That's where Brick comes in. Brick is a simple device that helps you put boundaries around your phone so you can actually be with your partner. You just pair the device to your phone and it locks distracting apps, and suddenly you're not half listening while trying to reply to texts or checking Instagram. Now, it's not about cutting out technology. It's about choosing presence during dinner, before bed, or when you're having a real conversation that deserves your full attention. Because relationships don't fall apart from one big thing. They fade from too many small moments of distraction. If you want to be more present with your partner, check out Brick. Go to getbrick.app/POR show for 10% off. That's getbrick.app/POR show.
So if you are in a relationship and you're, you know, like this is something that's second nature to you, how do you decide what areas, because no one's ever going to be perfect, right? Either yourself and your partner. How do you decide what the 20% is that needs to be perfect and the 80% that needs to be good enough?
Well, let's take principles and values. I mean, it's a deal breaker if my partner is unethical, if my partner doesn't have a sense of mission and purpose that guides their life or stuff like that. What needs to be a deal breaker? And those are foundational stuff that are about purpose, meaning, values, all of that stuff. But then, how I brush my teeth? Okay, so give me a break. You know, there are multiple ways to skin that cat.
Got it. This is helpful.
As Julie's taking notes. Well, I think with my partner, we kind of talk about, he's just a stickler for everything, the way things should look and be placed in the house, the way a date should go down, a birthday should go down. It's like very much innate in him, so that he doesn't even realize that he has these expectations. Yeah. So something we've been working on is, are you open to a new way of putting the sideboard or a new way of where the bed goes? You know, just being open to the idea of something new is just a nice start to it all.
Yeah. And realizing how much you're imposing on the other, with the assumption that there is only one way. And that's a real imposition. And people just feel so constrained around that much of a stickler.
Yeah.
And of course, there is compassion. The other thing we want to bring to our partners is, we are equalizing the playing field here by saying, you know what? We are all imperfect beings with saboteurs. Now, your saboteur might be a stickler. Mine is an avoider. Avoider is no better or worse than the stickler.
Right.
I'm going to take responsibility for my avoider. I'm going to work on my avoider. I'm going to try to improve on that. And let's you please also work on your stickler, right? Because both of us in this relationship are sabotaging the relationship through our saboteur. So a very powerful conversation is that I would love for people to do is take the saboteur assessment, which is on our website.
We'll link it also. Yeah.
Bring that information into a conversation that says, how do I self-sabotage? So you don't attack the other person. You actually only focus on yourself. How do I self-sabotage? How do I go go negative. The way we know you're in saboteur mode is when you go into negative emotion. Mm-hmm. And so what we say is anytime you're in negative emotion for more than a second, you're in saboteur mode. Mm. It doesn't matter what has happened, who did what to whom. If I'm still in negative emotion about it for more than a second, I am responding to this through my saboteur. The mm-hmm. sage, the inner Jedi in you, finds a positive mind modality, curiosity, empathy, creativity, calm, clear-headed, a mode that's positive to respond to anything. So basically the question that I would love both parties to come to is, how do I sabotage our relationship? Mm-hmm. And there's a judge thing. We start with the judge. How does my judging of myself, by the way, my judging of myself, not just my judging of you, but my judging of myself sabotages our relationship. Yep. Because if I'm constantly finding myself unworthy of love, right. then, and you give me love and I don't quite receive it because I find myself unworthy of it, I am sabotaging our relationship by judging myself. Right. So how is my judging myself and judging you sabotaging our relationship? As my avoider, stickler, controller, restless, whatever, sabotaging a relationship. So it's a self-reporting, not let me tell you how you're sabotaging right. us.
So do we have any more left or do we get
victim? One more. Victim. One more. Victim. This is a really victim. Good one.
Yes. So the victim, clear, it's a very well-known saboteur. I'm feeling particularly singled out for bad things happening to me and for things that you did, oh my God, poor me. So there is an orientation towards self-pity and feeling sorry for myself and constantly finding what's being done to me by the world, by others, by you. And it was one of my top saboteurs, a very sneaky one. It was actually very protective for me. I was in a cocoon of depression. I found out when I was 30 or so that I'd been in depression all my life, in a cocoon of self-pity, through this victim saboteur, which actually helped me remove myself from the world and soothe myself. What I realized the thing about victim was I so wanted love, but in the absence of love, I was giving myself pity, and pity is actually quite soothing. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people in the victim saboteur, they find it addictive to be in self-pity because self-pity is soothing. At some point, I realized while self-pity was soothing and comforting, it was a very bad substitute for actual love. Mm.
We always say too, it's like, what is the benefit? We know that, you know, sometimes you need a vent. We're not going to say that you don't. But a lot of times this misery loves company, just everything is going wrong, poor me mentality. Like, how is that actually serving you in the quest for love?
Yeah.
And again, at some point that becomes very self-fulfilling because if I think that people are particularly mistreating me and particularly not loving me and all that stuff, at some point people get so fed up that they do reject you. And then you say, I told you.
Exactly.
I told you people are singling me out. And it's a self-fulfilling prophecy like every other saboteur.
Right. If you think someone's going to ghost, they're probably going to ghost.
Yeah,
exactly.
And you're always in this why me mentality. So then you start seeing, oh, all my friends are in healthy relationships. Mm-hmm. You start finding evidence to prove your victim right when it's actually not the truth.
Exactly.
This one's tough. I think we've all been in the victim mode. It's hard to get out of it, which I guess is the next question is, now that we know all this, which I think I've connected so many dots just knowing it, so that alone is helpful. But what are some steps we can take to make sure our relationships don't suffer from this?
Yeah, so the most important is become aware of your own saboteurs. And so what we want you to do is do the saboteur assessment, which is a free assessment on positiveintelligence.com. So you do the 5-minute, it only takes 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Once you understand your saboteurs, then we want you to witness yourself the moment you go to saboteur. By the way, we know the way we tell if you're in saboteur mode is negative emotion.
Yeah.
So the moment you go to any negative emotion, you stop and label that moment and say, right now I'm in saboteur mode, stop. The thought in my head and the emotions it's generating is saboteurs. It's not serving me. I need to shift. So there's a 3-step process. First step is you witness yourself in saboteur mode and you label that moment as saboteur and say, no, this thought in my head is my judge's thought. It's not my thought. My controller is saying this. My judge is saying I'm unworthy. My judge is saying you are unworthy. My controller is saying this. My avoider is saying this. I am not saying it. It's not me. It's the saboteur saying it. Label it as saboteur. It takes away the power and credibility of that voice. So that's step number one. Step number two, you do these things we call a PQ wrap. It only takes 10 seconds and it shifts brain activation. It quiets the region of the brain where saboteurs live. It activates the region of the brain where your inner Jedi or your sage lives. And I want to do a Epicure up at least so that we know how to do it. So let's do a Epicure up with me. There are many ways to do it, but let's do one popular way. So please take two fingertips and gently rub two fingertips against each other. Gently rub two fingertips against each other with such attention that you can feel the fingertip ridges on both fingers. Gently rub two fingertips against each other with such attention that you can feel the fingertip ridges on both fingers. So that was about a little bit more than 10 seconds. We call this a PQ rep. PQ stands for positive intelligence quotient. And the PQ rep is each time you do this, and it takes only 10 seconds. If you had your head under a functional MRI machine, we would have noticed that it just this 10-second thing you did ever so slightly quieted the region of your brain where all your saboteurs live, and ever so slightly activated the region of your brain where your inner Jedi, where your sage lives. So what I did was I intercept the saboteur, said no to that, started doing these PQ reps. Now, maybe 10 seconds won't be enough initially. Maybe you need to do a minute or two. But as you do these, I promise you, you will feel a shift in your mind. And you now have access to a part of your brain that has access to your inner Jedi sage, who can figure out how to be more empathic, compassionate, loving towards yourself and towards the other people, and how to be in deeper curiosity, creativity, or calm, clear-headed action. All of those are powers of the sage. So you have just shifted yourself to the part of your brain activation that has access to these great positive powers. And step number three is then you respond to the situation with one of these positive modes. And there are five modes that in the book I go into deeper thing with. But the first one is empathize. Second one is explore, which is beginner's mind, deep curiosity. Mm-hmm. The third one is innovate. Think out of the box about how to deal with the situation. Fourth one is navigate. You're guided by a deeper sense of meaning and purpose. What really is important here, the kind of question you ask. And the final one is activate, which is calm, clear-headed, laser-focused, fearless action. Those are the five positive modes that your inner Jedi has. They all get activated if you do this 10-second stuff. So it's very repeatable. Like every challenge you have, every difficulty you have in a relationship, I promise you, if you intercept and do this, it's going to have a profound impact on your relationship, including the fact that you want to make a promise to each other in a relationship that when one party is very strongly hijacked, you will stop having a conversation, you'll cut each other some slack, and you will literally give each other a time, a break to go out for a walk and do these PQ reps, or actually sit there, do PQ reps together, or just take time off so that you recover back to the positive part of your brain before you continue your conversation.
We just did this last night. I can tell you it worked. My partner and I were in a heated conversation. My judge came out so hard and I rubbed my two fingers against each other. I was like, I got a PQ.
Awesome.
PQ.
Awesome.
I love it.
And it worked. I love it. I came back as a perfect angel. Just kidding. But no, it really does help to intercept the train of thought.
We recommend having a weekly cadence. And I give you an example. One of the CEOs that I coach in Boston, for the past 20 plus years now, every Wednesday, he and his wife are holding hands. They walk into this restaurant in their neighborhood. The staff in the restaurant knows there's this corner table that this husband and wife will get. And they always serve them rosé in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And they're holding hands, walking in. And the conversation they have every Wednesday is, since our last Wednesday dinner, has anything happened that we might consider a weed in our garden? Did I do anything or say anything that you really need to air? Make sure I understand. Make sure I hear. And each party makes sure they deeply understand what the other has said. Apologize for things if they understand or explain things, all of that stuff. This is weed pulling because we have only had a week to worry about it and make assumptions about it. And it also allows the husband and wife, let's say he's running out the door on Monday and he said something in a rush that she thinks was disrespectful or whatever. She doesn't have to stop him right then and there and say, stop, you just hurt my feelings or anything like that. Mm. Why? because she knows on Wednesday they're going to get to talk about it. So during the week, you can actually be more gentle with each other, you know, cut each other some slack because you know there is a time and a place where you will actually sit down and make sure you talk about it. Now, this is an example of having commitment to keeping a relationship healthy, because no matter what you do, there are things you do and say that rub the other person a little bit the wrong way. Right. And if you have a cadence that says every week we're going to talk about it, then you don't have to walk on eggshells with each other. You don't need to have a difficult time bringing it up because you know it's going to be brought up, right? So I would highly recommend a cadence like that.
So how do you have that type of conversation in a way that, you know, doesn't feel combative, and as the person receiving that information, you don't take it personally?
Well, notice that already by having a time and a place for it, it makes it easier, right? Because we now know we are going into this dinner conversation. We're going to have our rosé. We're going to be in a sage mode. And we have an agreement with each other, which says our job number one is deep understanding of the other person in this conversation. So there's the rule is when the other person says, when this happened, you know, it had this impact on me, my job number one is to say, here's what I'm hearing. Did I hear you correctly? Did I understand your feelings correctly? All that stuff. So already there is a thing we are making sure is happening, is that this conversation is happening when both people are in a sage mode. When I'm in my sage mode, I am activating a part of my brain that's more empathic, more compassionate, more understanding. The time you don't want to have these conversations is when people are hijacked. When the other person is all hijacked, in their judge, controller, avoider, whatever, you're wasting your breath to say, you know, you got to hear me now. This is what happened. How often have you experienced that when you're in that kind of mode, there is any hearing happening whatsoever on the other side? There isn't. So what we recommend is recognize when any party is hijacked. And one of our agreements with each other is we cut each other some slack. When somebody is hijacked in a situation, we don't insist on having a conversation right here and now. Let's do some PQ reps. Take time out so you shift your brain activation, so you stop being hijacked, so you activate the region of your brain where your Jedi lives, your sage lives, rather than your saboteurs. We call this work mental fitness. And the reason we call it mental fitness is that having the ideas is not enough. How often do you read a book and at the end of it, you say, oh my God, this was life-changing, I got it. How often do you go to a workshop and say, oh my God, this was life-changing and I got it. And 3 months later, you're right back to the old behavior. And the reason is that saboteurs have built muscles in your brain. By repeating and repeating and repeating their behavior, they have built neural pathways in the brain that becomes the muscle of that mode in your brain. You can't fight muscle with insight. You need to fight muscle with muscle, which means your sage, which hasn't practiced as long, it needs to build up that muscular power so that you have a fighting chance against your saboteur. What we have found is that you need a minimum of about 6 to 8 weeks. 6 weeks minimum, 15 minutes a day of practice of shifting from saboteur to sage, building up these positive powers so that you can really break through years and sometimes decades of saboteur behavior. Yeah. So for that, like the main program my company offers, which UA is doing right now, is actually a 6-week positive intelligence app guided training where every day we give you 15 minutes of practice and we focus on your exact specific saboteurs. We focus on a whole week of doing these PQ reps. We focus 3 weeks on these positive powers of your sage so that you build mental muscle memory, counter the old stuff. Yeah. So if you're really committed, you want to really build up the muscles, not just stop with the insights.
No, that's so important. I think it's really important for you all to hear that you're not going to solve all this just by listening to this episode. This is just step one.
This is just beginning.
To become aware of it. This has been such a fascinating conversation. I've personally learned so much from it. I think the biggest takeaway I have is that, you know, the more information we know about our behavior, our mindset, our intelligence, the way we process information, the better. Because there's nothing wrong with us. There's nothing wrong with our relationship this is natural. I think just even hearing that this happens to everyone, everyone has these saboteurs and they come out in different ways. And this is what makes relationships so difficult, but also wonderful at the same time, because it does shed awareness to ourselves. And the reality is, even if we're not in a romantic relationship, we're going to be in a relationship with people in our lives, unless we're lock ourselves away and we're a hermit, but that's not a fulfilling life either. We need that connection. So it's important to flex these muscles, regardless of what relationship status you are in, or if you desire to have that deeper, committed relationship where this is bound to come out. Getting ahead of this information up front is so essential. And there's a reason why relationships are called relationships, is because we're relational to each other. And I think the part around how we bring out and our other saboteurs are kind of activated because of the other person's saboteurs, it's really fascinating the cycle that we can get in. So getting ahead of this stuff and taking that time to address it, to become aware of it, and all the exercises that you shared with us, the sit downs, all of that, I think that is so important to prioritize to have a relationship that lasts.
Yeah. Yeah. Couldn't agree more.
Absolutely. In the interest of time, I'm going to keep mine really short. My biggest takeaway is we can't expect other people to be like us, and we can't expect to control other people or change their behavior. The only thing we have control over is ourselves. And that's why this type of work is so profound, because it labels the saboteurs, but also just the lies our mind is telling us. And it, for me, what has been most eye-opening through your program, Shirzad, is in doing my PQ reps, my mind defaults to my saboteurs. And I realize I have this default setting that influences everything I do in life. And if I can change that default setting to something that's more beneficial for me, that is the most powerful gift I can give to myself. So thank you, Shirzad, for being on our show. There's just so much more information. So for anybody who wants to learn more about the program, get a hold of your book, we will link positiveintelligence.com in our show notes. And for all of our listeners, if you want to improve your PQ score, just give us 5 stars in Apple Podcast reviews. I'm telling you, it is scientifically proven that your PQ score will go up if you give us a very nice review in Apple Podcasts. We really do appreciate that. Thank you so much again, Shirzad, for your time.
My pleasure.
If you haven't done so yet, subscribe to The Psychology of Relationships today so you don't miss an episode. And we'll see you all next week.
Bye.